want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You wanna. Do you want a podcast? Do you want a show? Do you get your laughs from computer radio with this bro, Scotty Mo? It's about time to lose your shit. Everybody's progress clips for that legend, Kevin Smith.
Welcome to Smodcast. I'm Kevin Smith. Okay, man, you know when a thing is good, when you hear about it or watch it, you go, fuck, why didn't I do that? Like, you go, it's suddenly what was never obvious before becomes the most obvious thing in the world to you, and you think you're clever enough to have pulled off the same fucking thing. That was never more true than when I heard about the premise of the movie that I just got to watch this morning. And I was way inclined to watch the flick because it stars one of my favorite actors in the world, the cat that I've been lucky enough to work with a few times, the first time of which was back in, I want to say, like 2004, 2005. Like, Norman Lear had asked me to direct some spots for, like, Get Out the Vote. The People for the American Way was sponsoring a, like, Rock the Vote campaign or something like that. And so they grabbed a bunch of people to do, hey, register to vote ads. They were, you know, nonpartisan or whatever the fuck. So, like, you know, I met a bunch of people. Like, I brought in people I knew, like Jane, Silent Bob. Damn Skippy did one of those. So I worked with Jason. I brought in Ben Affleck to do one and stuff. But then there were also people that were furnished to me and stuff, people that Norman Lear knew and people who were like, oh, that sounds like fucking a good cause. I'll jump in. So I met a bunch of like famous people that day and worked with them and stuff and saw a wide breadth of the performers in Hollywood circa 2000, 2004 and stuff. For example, Curb Your Enthusiasm, I guess, had started. Yes, because Larry David did one of the spots. And, like, I'll never forget how at the end of it, they were like, they had a PR unit there, a public relations unit. So, like, they're sitting there doing publicity after the spot. So once you did your spot, they bring you over and do, like, a second thing where they're just talking to you going, like, hey, what was it like doing this? How do you know Norman Lear? And have you ever worked with Kevin before? What's it like to work with Kevin Smith? So, you know, it just as the performer's done doing their fucking due diligence and some fucking political good in the world or whatever the fuck, or some governmental good suggesting people register to vote, suddenly they're then asked to do a secondary performance of like, hey, talk about working with this fucking guy. And so everybody who did it was generally like, you know, kind and just like, oh, look, the sooner I do this, the sooner I'll get the fuck out of here. So like, Kevin, oh, he was great or whatever. Fuck. I will never forget them like trying to explain this to Larry David and Larry David being like, what? Like almost insulted and being like, are you kidding me? All right, fine. And so I'm not involved. I'm across the room and shit, but I kept an ear on it and whatnot because I was a big Curb Your Enthusiasm fan. And so the interviewer goes through the standard kind of questions and, you know, Larry, not obviously not a standard guy. So he kind of, you know, looked at them blankly. And at one point they were like, you know, they asked him a question about like, why is it important to register to vote? And his answer was something along the lines of, I just said it. Like, I just said it in the thing. That's why we did all this. And then they were like, okay, what was it like to work with Kevin Smith? And he was like, who? Why are we doing this? And he walked off. So, in the middle of that day, they brought to me a kid who I was like, who's this? And they're like, this is the kid on the OC. This show's huge, man. And I was like, we got a hot kid? Thank God. So in comes Adam Brody. And he does a spot that involves toast. And I'm not saying I'm the best judge of character in the world. But we only worked together for, I would say, max about 45 minutes. And instantly I was like, this is my kind of fucking performer, man. Like from that point forward, I was literally invested in this kid's career. So much so that I put him in some of the least successful Kevin Smith efforts ever made and stuff like that. Most recently, he was in my favorite Kevin Smith effort ever made, Jay and Silent Bob reboot. But I love this cat. I've worked with him so damn consistently. Anytime I could pull him into something, because I love to watch him as a performer. And also, he don't get props for this. He is one of the best ad-libbers I've ever worked with in my life. So not only does that mean you're going to get a great performance out of the kid and he's going to give you what's in the script, he's also a really smart enough ad-libber to ad-lib within the scene, within character. So some people ad-lib on a set, just say something funny like Jason Mewes will fucking fart in the middle of a take and everyone's like, ah, 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 and the crowd cracks up. But that's not useful. Like, none of that footage is useful. It just blew a take and shit. Good for morale on set, but nothing really good comes out of it on the celluloid or digital at this point. So you love a ad-libber, somebody who can, like, throw in lines, bon mots, if you will, or just, like, take the story in a different direction, who are doing it within the script. And Adam was always one of those people. Even when we were doing the dopey political spot, he was like, can I, what if I just said this? And right away you realize, like, and I'm not just blowing him because he's here. I say this when he's not around. You're dealing with a smarter breed of cat. Like, instantly I respected him, where I was like, well, hello, who are you? And so anytime I've gotten to work with them, like I said, they've been in, like, some of the stuff that hasn't, you know, lit the world on fire, Cop Out, Yoga Hosers. More I think about it, Adam might be a fucking curse on my career and shit. Hollyweed, like, they're some of my favorite things. Like, Adam's outtakes alone on Hollyweed, not to mention his performance, are some of my favorite things I've ever committed to film that I still watch. Even though Hollyweed is cut, done, and never going to happen again, sometimes I just watch the outtakes because his ad-libbing was so brilliant. I used a lot of it in the actual scene. Like, I'll never forget him going, I have a gun. I am a proud gun owner. And it was so in character, but came out of nowhere. And I was like, I'm fucking keeping that. So anything Adam does, I tend to watch and whatnot. And so what came through the transom was like, hey, there's a movie. You want to talk to the people that made a movie? And I was like, what's the movie? They said, The Kid Detective. And I was like, that sounds adorable. Who's in it? And they said, Adam Brody. And I was like, Adam Brody's in a movie called The Kid Detective? Something's up here. So I went into it with high expectations when I watched this morning, based on the premise, which again made me instantly jealous, like, because somebody had to break it down for me and stuff. And their breakdown of it, how they translated it to me was like, Encyclopedia Brown grows up. And I was like, why the fuck has nobody done this before? Who's done it? It's too late? Fuck! Like, it just seemed like, oh my God, that's absolutely brilliant. So the premise had me before I started watching. But the moment I started watching, it's honestly some of Adam's career best work. It is darkly hysterical. It's not like, I'm not going to say, boy, it's a feel-good movie. It is such a breath of fresh air while being so insanely rarefied in the air that it breathes. It is, imagine if, like, and this is going to sound like the dumb version of it, but imagine if Brick was funny and didn't take itself so serious. It is one of the best mysteries I've ever seen, certainly in the last 10 years. And my wife makes me watch a lot of true crime bullshit. So I watch a lot of shit. I put this shoulder to shoulder with Gone Girl in terms of, like, a movie that was like, I didn't see this coming. And Gone Girl had, you know, came from a book and stuff. This blew me away. I'm going to get to talk to two of the filmmakers behind it, the director, who I believe is also the writer, and Adam Brody himself. So welcome to the show, the great Adam Brody, and his director on this movie, The Kid Detective, Evan Morgan. Welcome, kids. They're here via Zoom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What an intro, pal. What an intro.
All true.
I really appreciate it. And I've had some of my most fun ever working with you, ever. And
you're adorable.
You know, and maybe the most fun, and it was a time in my life too, and I know where you had the most miserable time, Cop Out. I had a wonderful summer in New York.
Yes.
Filming Cop Out.
But to be fair, you, and I'm not just saying it because it's you here, you made it better. Like, as much as he was the absence of all joy,
yeah,
the rest of the cast and crew saw that, because he was not, you know, subtle about it. He was pretty openly hostile. So because of that, you, Pollock, Tracy particularly, everyone else became double wonderful, as if to be like, you know, don't worry about abusive dad. Like, you're as good as the rest of us and stuff like that. So it was like whenever he, it sounds weird to say, but whenever he wasn't around, it was a really wonderful time. Yeah, like I enjoyed it like you did. But when he was around, there was a different air to it. But he took an instant liking to you. I remember that. Like, he liked you.
Yeah, we're talking about Bruce Willis, I should say. I think so. And I remember this one, funny enough. Yeah, so I wasn't directing him. You know what I mean? Like, and in fact, I barely worked with him. We have like less than a handful of scenes together. So I'm just observing, and I'm like, and even when he wants to do shit like direct me through you by telling you to tell me to do something different, I'm like, I don't care, Bruce Willis, sure. And then when he leaves early and I'm working with a stand-in again, I'm like, you know, standing off camera, I'm like, that's great too, because I can do what I want. Furthermore, there's something with the star of that level, and I'm playing hostile to him.
Yes.
To like get the freedom to go, in this scene, I would never do this in real life. You make much more eye contact as an actor than you ever would as a you know, human being. And to go like, I'm just gonna fucking mad dog Bruce Willis in this. I'm just gonna stare at him like he's a piece of shit, you know? And get to do it.
Yes, it was part of the scene.
You know, it's funny to like be in that protective bubble where you can do that. And, you know, I don't know how much, you know, he was okay to me. There was the only time we hung, I guess. It's funny because it's probably like 11 at night, midnight or something. I'm in my trailer, and this is going to sound, I'm in my trailer. And when you're in a trailer, the air conditioning's loud. It's loud in there. And people, you can hear easy from outside, but they can't hear you from inside. So somebody knocks on the door and, you know, you can hear that knocks real loud, but they can't hear you. When you're like, come in. And I was tired of like, you know, people always are knocking. They want to tell you 5 minutes. Okay, keep your hair and makeup. Okay, makeup. Okay, just want to come in and set your clothes, your mic or whatever. Anyways, I was being lazy and I just didn't want to get up. I was like, come in. Somebody's knocking. And you know, then I heard another knock. I was like, come in. And it wasn't an angry yell. It was like, I'm just going to yell as loud as I fucking can because, you know, I just want them to hear me. I'm like, come in! And then, yeah, then Bruce Willis opens the door and invited me to have a drink with some vodka with him in his trailer with him and his, like, I don't know who the other guy was. Hanging out.
Steven Eads, man. Steven Eads, his boy Steven
and,
Eads.
I was like, kind of, I didn't care too much, but it's kind of embarrassing that I was just screaming at him and as Bruce Willis.
He was, he was an interesting character, but he was always kind to you. And like,
He
liked the cut of your jib, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't know if he was doing this to make me look a little silly or not, but I always remember it, and I kind of often quote it, which is, and it was also a surreal moment, and I know every other fucking kid has gotten to do this in some Bulgarian action movie with him too, so it's not like that special, but for me, it was like, I'm in a shootout with him, and we're like both ducking for cover, you know, and then we're gonna, you know, he's telling me charge in, and I'll go over there, or whatever. And we're in it, in the big finale shootout. And like, he said to me, he said, dirt, sweat, and blood. You can never have too much dirt, sweat, and blood on. So he's like, got, you know, he's got his makeup dude putting sweat or dirt all over him. And then he's got the spray can he's doing. And then he takes me and goes, just hoses me down. Again, a ridiculous amount. It looks like flop sweat, but it's great for the character and funny, and I don't know if it was a little bit of a ribbon or not at all. Either way, I always think of it, and it's incredibly true. It's incredibly true. Like, truthfully, the texture you get from being sweaty or having blood or having dirt is like invaluable.
He said that to Dave Klein. Like, Dave Klein shot the flick, and like right off the top, he was just like, dirt, blood, shadows. Like, he showed him the three angles from which to shoot his face, and he was like, dirt, blood, shadows, it's the best way you could shoot me. As often as you can get that going, please get it going.
Get it.
This movie delighted the hell out of me, man.
Like, awesome.
Absolutely fantastic. I don't know, I mean, again, I connected with the material before I even saw the flick, where I was like, oh, that's brilliant. And then when they were like, Adam's in it, I'm like, that's even better and stuff. Then there were tiny things that won't matter to anybody else, but really mattered to me, where I was like, they shot this in Ontario and they're not changing the license plates. Like, good, good. Like, that's how change begins. Like, there's no big deal about it made. They're not like, you know, well, here in Canada or something like that. It's just a story that happens to happen there. And it instantly charmed me because it looked like the town I grew up in. I didn't grow up in Canada. I grew up in New Jersey. But like Willow, is it Willowbrook?
Yeah.
It's got to be a fictional town, right? Like, that's not a real town.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea behind it was kind of the town that you remember from Encyclopedia Brown and Nancy Drew. And, you know, they all kind of are interchangeable in terms of how quaint they are, how, you know, familiar they are, you know. And we just got lucky with where we shot this movie up in Northern Ontario, where we just found this place that was that. It was that exactly. Like, it just felt like there was a bubble around it. And except for the fact that economically it actually was like struggling and like every third storefront was abandoned. It was just, when I got out there to scout it, I, you know, I was a ball of nerves because we were thinking primarily in terms of tax incentives and how we were going to make this particular movie on this budget. And, you know, are the locations going to be more limited? As soon as I got there, it was just like walking already into the world of the movie, where it was just, yeah, it's like, okay, this is like Dennis the Menace and, you know, the Little Rascals or whatever else, like that perfect kind of, you know, sort of quaint Americana, even though it's, you know, shot it in Canada, you're not really supposed to know where it's set. Like,
right.
That literature.
Only
yeah.
sharp eyes, like, because I'm a big Canada file.
Very excited to do. It was hard to get finance because it's just me. There's no other roles for like known entities. So, but I was very excited to do it there and to film it with all Canadian actors and ideally kind of no one you've seen before, because we're transforming, you know, taking you on a low budget to a heightened world that, you know, inventing the whole world and you've never been there. And it's, and also as a viewer, it's such a treat to see fresh people. I get so sick of the same 10 people, and it's a business and you gotta use them, and you know, but it's so nice to be introduced to new faces and new, and so just to give it that otherworldly quality was very valuable to me.
The cast is absolutely phenomenal. You're right. They're all fresh faces and whatnot, but it lends to the story itself to get lost in it. Like, it helps that you are the only recognizable face, because in the story itself, you are the local celebrity. So yeah. Like it adds a layer to your character of like, oh, he's famous to us too. And then when you interact with the rest of the world, they're fantastic performers, man. Each one of them. Like, nobody gives a bad performance in this movie. But you've just never seen most of them before. Not even in, like, you know, Degrassi shows or something like that. Who mm-hmm. plays the principal, who is absolutely fucking amazing?
So good.
So
he's a Canadian veteran actor named Peter McNeil, and he's been in a lot of stuff for a long time.
I recognize him from, like, yeah. from Cronenberg stuff. Like, but I didn't do the deep dive on Google, but like, I was like, he looks so familiar to me. He killed it. And
I know. Yeah.
And I ain't spoiling nothing, but like, he's integral. Every piece of the puzzle is integral. It is an absolute mystery that holds together and works as one. It is stirring at the end. I saw the literature described it as a dramedy, and I was like, I don't think that's even fair. Like, it's in a genre that's very distinctly its own. There's an air of familiarity as you watch the movie. It's not alien by any stretch of the imagination and stuff, but it's so original that you're like, oh, this, I'm seeing the beginning of someone's career here. Like, somebody, I'm going to be seeing stories like this from this filmmaker for the next 20 years. And I'm here. This is my blood simple experience with this filmmaker. But Evan, you go further back. We were kind of quasi involved together on a movie that I fucking thought was absolutely brilliant.
Me too.
And
me
then,
too.
And when I saw that you were involved in both, I was like, well, that, like, what, that makes sense. You were involved with the Dirties, you know, Matt.
Oh yeah. 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 I was one of the Dirties. It was just four of us in a basement shooting that film. And, in the beginning at least, and then in the edit, there were three of us. And so,
our roles in that one all kind of were pretty fluid. It was a pretty like intense and like amazingly collaborative time for us. And yeah, I think like it's crazy to me that it's been 7 years since that came out.
It's been a minute, man. Yeah,
I've been working on this. Yeah, this was my follow up. Like this, I've been working on this since we like shoved the dirties off into off of shore and like it premiered. And I was thinking, okay, well, what's going to be the next thing? And it's just taken this long to get it together. And I guess the good news is that, you know, the way it came together was just fantastic in terms of, like, as you say, the cast, the crew, the location, like so much. We got so much good luck in the last year of this movie that it sort of eluded us when we were trying to finance it previously. But yeah, The Dirties was, that was for me like a big awakening, because I, out of film school, I kind of slipped into this habit of like, you know, just living in the world of the script and getting very comfortable there and waking up every day and, you know, without any schedule, without any real sense of accountability, just like, you know, playing with ideas and, you know, dialogue and da 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 da. And it took me a long time to realize that I could have done that forever and just kept writing a script forever. Right. It was Johnson, who was one of my best friends coming out of film school, he'd had his web series Nirvana the Band, the show, and was trying to apply that that mode of shooting to a feature film. The logic being that, like, of course, no one is going to judge us if we make this for $20,000-$30,000. It's supposed to look like shit, and we can tell a story that, you know, avoids any kind of scrutiny in terms of like, oh, it doesn't look like a proper film. And so he was really excited about this idea and invited me to participate in it with him. And then he'd had a draft of the script, which we dismantled and re-put back together again in a way that made it more conducive to an improvisational shooting, philosophy. Mm. And, four dudes who made that movie were just living together for like 2 months and just shooting. And it was like the most fun sleepover we ever had. And as a result, we ended up with this movie, and it was kind of like a point for me where it was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, it liberated me from from my bedroom in terms of not having any relationship with my environment and, you know, not having any chemistry in terms of like the creative process, not having anyone to bounce ideas off. That was pretty wicked. I know that's a long answer to a short question.
No, it's fucking juicy and good. But wait a second, so I want to take you back to how many years you've been working on this now.
It's been 7 years. It must be over 7 years since I had the idea and pitched it to Adam.
So you're living in fear for 7 years that somebody is going to make the kid detective grows up movie before you. Like, that would terrify me. Like, having to hold on to a Fabergé egg for that long without fucking dropping it or somebody copying it and stuff, that's the big fear. That's why I'm always trying to rush shit through production, like, because I know I don't have enough patience to wait that long. And I'm always scared that, like, somebody else is going to hit the idea before I do, man. Like, how painful were those 7 years?
It wasn't something that I was worried about in the beginning. Just because, again, yeah, I kind of fell back into my old routine of like, I'm not in the world. I'm just in my own little space. And so I wasn't really thinking about it in those terms. I'll tell you what happened. It was insane. When we finally got it financed, when we finally had like basically a verbal commitment from Telefilm, who came in and ultimately completed the financing for us, you know, that was the moment where that was sort of like, oh, we finally did it. And then I think it was around TIFF time, and I was at a TIFF party the next day, and someone was like, did you see that, like, Joss Whedon is executing this, like, show about, you know, a former kid detective who's going to be, like, who's now in her 30s and still da-da-da. I was like, you've got to be kidding.
Did that happen? And, was that a thing?
It never went forward. And after that, there were two other things that were brought to my attention that were basically like very similar, you know, like, let's just say identical, like, premises, but featuring women, I think, two of them. And that's when I really started sweating, because even though we had a verbal commitment, we knew we weren't actually going to make the movie for like a year.
Right.
And that was when I was like, oh, we finally did it. And now someone's going to beat us to the punch. And like, That's the thing about this premise is you really want it to be fresh. You don't want it to be one of those like Deep Impact Armageddons, you know, like you want people to have the reaction that you had, which is just like, ah, okay, this makes sense. The irony of this is something that like I can relate to. And so I was very panicked at that point where I was like, oh, this movie's cursed. And even when we financed it, someone's going to get there first and maybe bigger.
You got to you landed on the moon first and definitely planted the flag. Like, now whoever follows is a copycat at this point. The good news is that sometimes you see somebody has a brilliant idea and then it falls into the hands of poor execution where you're like, no, we'll never have that chance again. And shit. The good news is that Kid Detective is absolutely wonderful, like beyond sticks the landing. It starts out charming, becomes funny, becomes warm, becomes sad, then becomes dark and becomes an actual mystery that you realize you've been watching the whole time. And then has this wrap up. I'm trying not to spoil the movie. It has the wrap up that I don't want to spoil the flick, but I will say this. I will say this. What you're going to. I don't know if we want to do it on the show, but without spoiling the, like, I'm not saying where it happens or what scene, but why the tears? That was the one thing I was like, was it just a sense of like exhaustion?
Well, I think there's a part of it that's left up to, you know, the viewer's interpretation.
Is it that? Is it a classy artsy thing where it's like, no, let the viewer decide?
I think like with that particular moment, I understood that there was that openness where like people were going to maybe interpret it differently. For me, ingrained in the very first like idea of this film was just like, if it's going to be about a kid detective who's, you know, a stunted adult, like the movie has to be about his coming of age. He can't really properly come of age unless he confronts something that is just so dark, so sinister that, you know, now he's an adult. He's sort of liberated from his selfishness and like, you know, he's lost his innocence, but you know, and I get, and that is sort of how I frame like the scene that you're referring to where, you know, there's something that's lost that can never be regained. And also so much is hung on this character's shoulders for, you know, 2 decades in terms of the first mystery when he was a child. And like, there's the burden of, you know, believing that it was his responsibility to solve a case that was well beyond his, you know, reach. And so it's kind of those two things sort of working together that like, for me, bring us to that particular moment.
And I love it.
It's a divisive, not divisive, but people go, you know what I mean? People are all in and not everyone is, you know, it definitely divides people, but I've loved it since the moment I read it and it brings the irony of the title home.
That was in the script?
Yeah.
Right on, man. Good to know. It's a storyteller.
Well, yeah, I guess I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah, but. No, don't. To be fair, for those, like, I probably didn't even set it up properly. The Kid Detective tells the story of literally that, a kid detective in a town. I've referenced Encyclopedia Brown because I was a big fan of the series when I was a kid. The idea is the kid detective who, you know, like would 50 cents a case and put quarters in the jar and solve the, you know, missing case of the money or this or all the cases, very small in hometown, and the town is incredibly proud of him and stuff. Like, what would happen if like he didn't ever leave the town and but still wanted to be a detective years on and stuff like that? So that's of course like where Adam comes in and plays it expertly and brilliantly. But the mystery of it, like, was the thing that, like, up front, like, it says it in the title, The Kid Detective. But the movie is so disarming that at a certain point you forget that you are watching a mystery. And then so when the mystery does kind of kick back in, you're like, oh, shit, that was stealth. Like, well done. It was when there were 3 moments that I remember very specifically laughing out loud long and hard to the point where I had to pause the movie and then go back and rewatch one. And I'm not giving, I'll talk about them, but where they are in the movie, we'll let the viewer find them. I'm not even going to spoil the line, but you're under the breath, dismissive throwaway comment about your secretary. Timing of it, the timing and the pitch that destroyed me. The pitch of it was just quiet enough because the person you're sharing the conversation with is not someone you would ever say it in front of. Killed me. My favorite visual gag that I had to go explain to my wife, though, was the setup. It was the payoff. The setup is in the beginning when they tell the story. Adam is doing voiceover, as you do in a classic detective story. And he's telling you the story of being the boy detective, the kid detective, and, you know, his place in the town. And at one point, he's given free ice cream for life, you know. And so there's a shot of the 12-year-old Abe, the character Adam plays, getting an ice cream cone who's been handed to him by, a friendly guy behind the counter who's all smiles and happy to give this local star ice cream. And it's, you know, just buried in the setup of the beginning of the movie and stuff. And they brilliantly come back to it later on when Adam Brody walks into the same ice cream parlor and you know what's about to happen, or you hope. And then you see the guy behind the counter who's older, but the same guy behind the counter, and he's happily serving a kid or something. Kid steps away and he looks up and his face drops when he sees Adam. Adam asks for the free ice cream. His performance and your performance, you're like the shame of, like, I hate to do this, but it is free and you promised. That side of it, and then his side of it of, like, I can't believe you're fucking still coming here. Like, killed me so much. That's how I sold it to my wife. I was like, I know you're going to love to watch this and here's why. That was absolutely fantastic. The movie is full of moments like that, plus, like, just these amazing performances that you're getting out of, like, what looked like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, Evan, high school kids. Like, aren't these kids legit kids?
Yeah, a lot of them are pretty young. I think, like, the kid who plays Calvin, he was 15, I believe, when we shot. And
Sophie, who plays Caroline, the main girl in it, she's 19.
And has she been in anything else?
She's been a lot. She's been in The Book Thief. She's a lead in The Book Thief, and she's been working a long time. She's great. She's been attached to this for like 3 years. We know she's perfect for a long time.
Absolutely magical. And you guys, your chemistry together was like wonderful. And never once, and this is like, you got to give the props, never once creepy. Like, and that's...
Believe me, that was a concern. And in fact...
Never once.
You know, I like who we have as Lucy, the secretary, the goth secretary. For a while, Evan and I had a long conversation because he wanted initially, and in the script, the goth secretary, when I'm older, is also supposed to be young because theoretically I couldn't pay her and whatever. And I'm like, no, I can't.
Right. We can explain one, not more.
And I think she looks young enough too that it's not like he has this legit, you know, receptionist attending to the phone. So as far as the issue of logic, I think we're kind of okay. But yeah, by and large, like, we were working with a lot of young actors who, I think most of them had like one or two like notable credits. I don't think there was anyone who was super, super fresh.
Funny enough. So there's a whole part that's cut out. The part where I wake up in the dumpster.
Yeah, yeah.
There was actually
as the shot pulls out and as you crawl out of the dumpster, I'm like, he's an actor. They just can't keep their clothes on. Like, they just
well, this is where I'm going with it. So there's a whole sequence that's out of the movie that is really funny on its own, but was just too meandering, where I go to downtown, our band plays a show, you don't even see it, but I go to a party afterwards with girls that were the relatives of the parents of the boy who was killed. Anyways, I wake up, they all speak Chinese, I don't wake up, I do a bunch of drugs, I'm unconscious, they think I'm dead, they try to slap me awake, I'm not. So they carry me, three like small women carry me in their underwear, and I'm naked down their apartment hallway and slide me into the garbage chute. And that's actually in the original draft. Anyways, Evan and I had a long talk. He was really pushing me to go full frontal.
Dick out in the garbage can?
In like being carried by these girls.
Right.
And then, yeah. And I like considered it because it's hilarious. And I was just like, no. And, you know, part of it, ultimately, I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't. I didn't think it was necessary. I pride myself. I'm like, yeah, for comedy's sake, I would. But also, I was like, there's a lot of young people in this movie. And I know it's dark and it's rated R, but they're all going to see it, and maybe I don't need to show my dick.
How will that they treat me seriously ever again?
It was definitely one of the most awkward phone calls I've had to make, was watching that like shoot day creep up on the schedule, knowing that I was going to try and convince Adam to like bear all with it. And then finally we got to the eve of it. And my pitch was basically, yeah, that I think like his type of actor, like our familiarity with him just makes that kind of moment so much more surprising. You know, if it's Harvey Keitel or whatever, Willem Dafoe means nothing. You don't give a shit. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You're always but seeing Adam, Harvey Keitel's dick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like if Topher Grace showed his dick in a movie, you know what I mean? It's like that kind of, you know, relationship that we have with him where we just haven't gone to that place before. And I just thought that that was going to be truly like the funniest gag in the film. And as it happened, we cut out the entire sequence. So
isn't that weird how sometimes you're like, oh my god, this is the scene, and then on the day you shoot it and you're like, it's magic, and then in the editing room you're like, well,
yeah, it really was good. It just made the movie like 10 minutes longer, and you know, the scene on it, the stuff on its own is still like a great sequence.
And in the story, it didn't suffer at all from the, like, I to me it was like he took the pill and then, you know, he wakes up. Yeah. So it really was amazing. Pretty damn
fantastic. That was tough. Yeah. Removing that was crazy. And one of the conceits of the movie really is that like we're teasing the audience a lot where something that seems like it's going to be important then dissolves. You know, it's like just when you think it's about to turn into a real detective story, it doesn't.
Right.
And I think this was just the bridge too far moment for us, where it's like, oh, we couldn't take them on this other kind of completely tangential adventure just for the sake of the sight gag. It was just like, as funny as it was in its in and of itself, it was a drain. It was crazy and a tough one to lose, but thankfully,
as they say, sometimes you got to kill your babies, and that was one of them. But as a guy who watched it and now heard it, like, you're not hurting for lack of it.
It was exciting to watch this. I mean, as every movie does in the editing process, but I got to be very involved in this one, and to watch this thing get tighter and tighter and more impactful and funnier, and you know, it was really incredible. I'm really happy with where we ended up. Also, let me just say, So this was a long fucking journey. This is weird to even have made it and to be taught. I've never been a part of something this long. And then, you know,
Evan said something before about like you first, were you talking about it that far back?
He literally, he like approached me at a film festival and we met, and then we met in LA, and then he pitched me the idea, and then he showed me, this is like, again, 2012. Then, you know, 6 months later, sent me a first act. Didn't even know where I was going to go. Didn't know if the kid should go to the city and do the mystery there or stay in the small town. But it, still, the first act was pretty much what it is. I loved it. And then I didn't hear from him for a year and a half. And then he came back with the full script. I loved it. And then we took it around town, tried to get it made for 4 years, you know, and were with some producers for a while, and then started to think it wouldn't happen. When I think of all the things I was willing to do, I was like, if somebody will just give us $300,000, I'll put, I don't care. Like, any, let's, and
I'll take my dick out in front of women.
Yeah. For the longest time, I started to lose faith, and I was like, also get bored, quite honestly, with not the movie, but like, I don't, just talking to people asking for money and so forth.
Right.
And particularly indie films where it's like, do you even have money? Why am I talking to you? Do you even know what a fucking film is? Because sometimes you're talking to somebody with oil money or something, and it just, or, you know.
I went through the process for Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and at one point.
I was like, for the longest time.
At one point, they, you know, they were like, we had money that was locked in, and then the money fell out. And so Liz and Jordan were like, all right, well, we were going to set up a meeting with more money people. And I was like, don't bother. Like, I got a house. I'll second mortgage the house, but like, I can't do it anymore. Like, yeah. I can't ask people for money anymore. And because I'm always sitting there going like, well, you know, the logic is you're never supposed to put your own money into your own work, but I'm like, that's how I got started. If I hadn't fucking financed my own movie, nobody was making it and shit like that. So rather than go through that process, meet new people and shit, I was like, I'd rather put up my fucking house for the final piece of this equity and stuff. So it can be a trying process. The fact that you guys were able to keep hope alive for seven years.
Yeah, that's Evan. I was, for the longest time, I was like, for the last year or two, I was like, particularly the last year, I was like, it's a long screenplay. Let's cut it up at 6 episodes. Let's go sell it to TV. Let's make it a series. It lends itself to that. At least, maybe it'll get made, maybe it won't. But I can get us in 10 rooms with people with money. And we can just pitch it and they can read it. And we can, well, here's the first season. And we can like get an answer versus this. And he kept the faith. We got new producers. And in the 11th hour, because I was like, hey, if I turn 40, I'm not doing this anymore. I can't do all I was like, I don't want to fucking play this anymore. And I turned 40 like 2 months after we filmed it last year. And so all of a sudden, you know, Telefilm came through and then these other, and then we're making it at a healthy budget and making the movie we want. I couldn't, it was so surreal after such a long journey to be on set doing it. And then had all, you know, the film festivals have been down. So kind of didn't do that. And then Sony bought it. Turns out we had a first look deal with them. So it wasn't really, we didn't even know, but it like wasn't exactly an option. It was like, that's what you have to do.
Right.
Like, so kind of like blinded, had to go in blind and hope for the best. This is like only like 6 weeks ago, last Monday, maybe Tuesday, literally a week ago, they go, so, hey, we're going on 850 screens in a week and a half and 200 in the UK. And so that's where we're at now. And so they're like, and they were very open with us and letting us give our notes on a you know, very quick trailer and poster. And here we are a week into this campaign. The movie comes out Friday on a ton of screens in this weird dystopian apocalyptic abandoned screen universe where you can just like have a tent pole, you know,
yes.
Movie all of a sudden. It's just the weirdest journey. And I'm so excited that after all this, here we are. We made the movie we want to make, and with a super quick turnaround too. And it's going to get to be shown and, you know, streaming a few months after. And it's exciting.
It looks really great. Like, it's lensed incredibly well, composed really well and stuff. It aside from just the story, which is enjoyable, and the performances, which make it even more so. But you are you say you just turned 40. But in the flick, you're like 30 something, right? Like 35.
Yeah, we always debated. I guess 32 is what I say.
Yeah, at one point 32 is.
It's funny because all the production, the promotion material says 31, 32. I was always like, let's bump it up to 33, 34, but 32 had a nice ring to it.
And it's no. But yeah, yeah, I didn't bump into it at all.
Only for me. Only for me.
But there could easily be a weird creep factor of like, all of his scenes are with teenagers, but your character is so regressed himself. He's never left like that world that he relates to the kids, not condescendingly, but like almost on the same level, which like, as I sat there going like, man, he's pulling off like scene after scene with high school kids. And I realized it was like, oh, because like, he's at the same level they are character wise. He's not gone further, which makes the third act even more like compelling. Cause I, you know, again, without giving anything away, like there is a mystery at the heart of this. Like at one point it's adorable when you're like, I've solved over 200 mysteries using the word mysteries, but like there's an actual crime at the center of this movie and it's harrowing. It's not like, it's not charming, like middle America or middle Canada or something like that. It's pretty damn harrowing. There's two crimes that are pretty damn harrowing. And yet you never laugh at the characters. You're laughing at the quirkiness of the world. And it's incredibly well balanced. What comes to mind is Raising Arizona. And as much as they were, the Coen brothers, no slouches, were able to pull off a film about kidnapping children, which is like one of the most horrific notions in the world to any parent and stuff, and still make a classic comedy. This, like, handled small town crime and like teen like murder in the same way. Like it dealt with it with gravity, but the world around it was nimble and original. That was what was so breathtaking about watching it the whole time. I'm like, they're going to fall off the tight wire. There's no way you could make it to the other side. And then you make it nimbly to the other side and then do a pirouette and fucking go back just to be impressive and stuff. It's a rare like act to pull off. That's why as I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, this guy is going to work forever, man. How long did it take you to when you finally start writing the script? Adam talked about you wrote a little bit and then he didn't hear from me for a while. How long did it take you to write?
Took a long time. First, let me say, like, hearing you talk about this is just like so enjoyable. Like,
it's great.
Honestly, it means
it's
so much.
Great movie.
Hardly anyone has seen the movie. And, you know, like, it's a weird thing to go from 0 to 100 where, like, nobody has seen this film. And now, as Adam says, like, in a few days, a lot of people will have seen it. So it's like, it's been a very interesting process for me. We only finished it a few weeks ago. And hearing all that, like, man, it's just amazing.
And it's very much, by the way, it's very much like for you. I was very much hoping you'd get a chance to watch it and like it because, you know, you are our audience for this, I feel like. As am I, as are we, you know, it's not for everyone. It's not supposed to be for everyone.
And you weren't crazy when you talked about like, oh my God, let's break it up and turn it into a series. Because as I was watching it, I was like, I would watch 4 more hours of this. Like, this easily could be Search Party, you know, or something like that. It's so well constructed and stuff. But nobody goes to film school going, like, I want to make a series. Like, we all want to make a movie. And so when the credits rolled, I was, like, kind of happy that it wasn't a series. Yeah. Because it was like you could see what it was organically meant to be. And not to say it couldn't have worked. It absolutely would have worked. But, like, that last shot. Like, you know, I was already in part and fucking parcel and shit. And I was like, bravo. But then the last shot happens and you're like, oh my God, we just saw something. Like, we just saw something important on top of, we saw something entertaining, something new. But you, like, as it came to a close, I was like, oh shit. Like I can pay it no higher compliment than this. Me personally, at the end of the movie, I had to go have my wife explain it to me, and she didn't even watch the movie. Thankfully, her explanation was close to how you guys explain things as well. But, like, you know, I was like, oh, my God, like, he went so smart at the end. It's a movie that, like, I'm glad it was for me, but, like, it's for anybody that likes, back in the day, in, like, the 90s indie film, we would say, you know, and nobody says it anymore, but like, oh, that's the edge. This was the edge. As I was watching it the whole time, I was like, holy shit, I'm seeing the future before the future unfolds. And now it makes even more sense that you're like, you're literally seeing the future. It comes out at the end of this week and nobody's fucking seen it yet. It felt like, I was like, why am I, how come, like, I instantly, when I was done watching, I fucking deep dived on Google going like, who else is talking about this miracle of a movie? And there was nobody. And then I realized, oh shit, they're about to come out, and I pieced it all together and stuff. Once people start seeing it, it becomes instant chatter material, man. Like, the performances are fucking top notch, but it's, the story is so unbelievably compelling and the characters are never condescended to. They're equals in every level, which is just so weird because one guy's 32 and everyone else is 15, 16 years old. It's a magic act of a fucking movie, man. And now it took you 7 years to get here. Are you prepared for another magic act, or does it take a long time to get to the next thing? That's the worst thing about this job, is you pull off a minor miracle and then sooner or later somebody's like, what's next? And you're like, what's next? How the fuck? I just finished this. But did it open up the floodgates a little more?
I mean, yeah, like, in the sense that at a certain point, you know, I couldn't only concentrate on this. And so I was able to kind of, like, you know, Adam and I were spitballing other ideas, and we have a few of those that are in various stages of, like, development. And I wrote another script where, you know, he's a supporting character. It's kind of like a horror comedy that really we started working on because it was a smaller film in terms of its scale, and it's a horror comedy. So there's that genre, you know, like, it's not as hard to pitch. And, you know, as it happened, we got to make The Kid Detective before we made that movie, but I would still love to do that. And I'd love to do something that's, like, larger as well. I am somewhat traumatized by the fact that this took 7 years, and like, the prospect of starting from scratch on something is definitely intimidating. The script is, to address the former question, like, for me, the most intimidating aspect of this was the fact that it was a mystery, and I'd never written a mystery. I also wasn't really that much of a mystery guy. I'd never really, you know, like, I wasn't really a Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett guy. I didn't watch mystery shows or movies really. I got into it the second I started and like tried to inhale as much as I could. And what I learned quickly was that you kind of have to write the ending first and work backwards, which is ultimately why it took so long. Because at least when you're writing any other kind of film, like you can surprise yourself every single day with like the turns and the way that the story wants to unfold, and it acquires its own momentum. Whereas with this, it's like there was no momentum ever, because it's like it started at the end and then you're going backwards. And all I could kind of do to keep myself engaged was to just try and like inject it with, I guess, as much sort of like idiosyncrasy, you know, make it as specific in terms of the world as possible, and inject some of myself as well into the character, which like, you know, I remember the first time I showed the script to Adam, or the first act, as he was saying years ago, he was like, oh yeah, man, I love it. Like the guy, the character is, he's like such a loser. I was like, ah, right. Yeah. So much of it is me like in my, you know, mid 20s with like my hyper attentive parents and wondering like, you know, well, how's my script coming along and like, how's it going becoming like a feature filmmaker? And
oh my God, I didn't even see that. See, that's how good of a storyteller you are. There's a story behind the obvious story, and the story is one that I can literally relate to, where people are like, how's it going, Hollywood? How's your career? Oh, that's fantastic, man.
I also, let me just say, like, this is, so I lived with the script for 7 years, and I had this experience with it that I almost, or at least 5 years, that I almost never have, which is every other script I have been a part of, like, you get it, and it's, even if you like it a lot on the first read, you know, you're surprised, and, oh, that was funny, you know, that was clever, I didn't expect that, and then, okay, now I'm going to go to work on it. Now I'm going to be part of it or whatever. And then you dig in more and more, and you kind of like it less and less as you read it more and more. And you got to kind of like start filling it with stuff. And this became richer the more I read it, you know, the whole time. I mean, even on set, it's just deceptively deep. And even on set, after years with it, I would be hearing Evan talk to me or give notes to another actor going like, oh yeah, I never even caught that, or I never thought about it that way. And discovering new things in it. So it really is rich in a way that never got old to me over the years. Because I so easily could have lost interest 3 years in. Took it, you know, I wouldn't read it for 2 years at a time. And then I'd give it another read and go like, God, it's no good.
It's got like broadly yet narrowly comedic, like fucking shuriken, if you will. Like watching you beat the shit out of a high schooler. Like I had no idea how much I would enjoy that, and I didn't see it coming. Whole fucking movie was unpredictable. I literally did not see the third act coming. And even if there was some part of me that was just like, well, the one thing from childhood maybe should be picked up on and stuff, I did not see the resolution. Like and right then and there, like, it's easy enough when you hear the premise to be like, oh man, why didn't I do the Encyclopedia Brown Grows Up movie? But when I saw the movie, I was like, that's why I didn't do the Encyclopedia Brown Grows Up movie. I would never have come up with that third act. And it is stunning. It's like harrowing, but not to the point where it's like suddenly you're in a brand new movie. You realize, even though it gets dark in tone, that you've been in that movie the whole time. Like, there was a moment where I was like, oh yeah, this all began with a fucking murder. Like, and you know, you fall in love with the small town charm, and particularly Adam's character's interplay with the girl who hires him, then you tend to forget that there is going to be like something darker underneath, and it delivers. Like, it doesn't get to the 75% mark and you're like, holy shit, this could be the greatest movie ever made, and then fucking putter out where it's like, well, how can you take it to that far? It goes for it and fucking takes you to the finish line where you're like, holy shit, I've never seen that movie before. That is the best compliment I think I could give it, is like, I've never seen this movie before, and I've seen a lot of mysteries. Like, you know, I've been on this earth 50 years, so I've been watching movies for at least 45. And I've seen all sorts of fucking mysteries. I've seen all sorts of, like, my wife is a true crime nut, so I've seen all sorts of fucking, like, true crime shit and whatnot. So I'm familiar with tropes and everything one could do. And when all was said and done, I was like, I've never seen that movie. That's usually the highest compliment I could pay something and stuff. Now, I hope that means that everyone's willing to go for the fucking trip as well. And they'd be silly not to, because it fucking delivers, man. But you, unfortunately, when you're that good, you may be so far out in front of everybody else that you may have to wait 5 years for everybody else to catch up. I hope not, because fuck, it works like crazy. You said it's coming out on how many screens, and when? What's the release plan?
So coming out Friday. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you do it.
Yeah, it's coming out Friday. I think like on 850 screens in the U.S. I don't know where, not New York and L.A., but you know where movie theaters are open. And then I think last I heard it was coming out on a couple hundred in the U.K. as well. There's an ordinary window until streaming, like ordinary theatrical window, but that could change as everything is changing these days.
Yeah, everything is kind of changed. But you mentioned something that's so true. Like, I wish I had a fucking movie in my back pocket to take out right now, because it would be like the best way to release a movie. There's almost no pressure. It's all upside, and there are empty screens, and like a movie like this could get a bunch of screens. Like pre-COVID, they would make you jump through hoops for some screens on a smart movie like this. But in this day and age, they're like, oh my God, play it out there, put it out there, let everyone see it and stuff. And they will not be disappointed. It's absolutely fucking stellar. Brody, in terms of performance, you said something really interesting about the script thing, and I gotta imagine that's true. The idea of, like, I've seen, you know, once you're overly familiar with the script, it loses its freshness. Is that where, like, the ad-libbing and the, like, here, I want to try this, where that all comes from, where you're like, I gotta keep it fresh for me, I just can't fucking say these lines, like, because, and you are good at it, like, when you bring something to the table, You've never brought anything to my table where I'm like, oh my God, how about I'll do the writing and you fucking do the acting. Each time it's like good shit. Like, really,
I really appreciate that. And you know, I don't have the same confidence in my ad-libbing you do. I have confidence that in my taste. So like, I don't have confidence that I can think of something great on the spot, but I have confidence that like, if I come to you and I say, I got a good idea, I can't promise it'll work, but it's a good idea, you know? But I often need time to think about that. This script is, and tone is so meticulous that, you know, I didn't improv at all. And quite honestly, Evan and I butted heads a little. He's so meticulous that, you know, he would come out, you did the first, like, even day one, I was like, oh, fuck. You know, we do the scene, I do it once, and I got to do one to get warmed up. Like, I'm not even warm until the second, you know, I'm like, I'm just trying to get the lines, and, you know, and then I'll start trying stuff in the second or third. And after the first take, you come up with like 10 notes, you know, when you said this here, and like, little, like, take a breath here, like that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I was like, oh, wow. And also, while they were incredibly specific, they were in general like, do less, you know, to where I would start here. He would bring it, you know, he would hammer it down to here, to where it's like barely alive. And then we would kind of go, okay, can I do one with a little more? And the last take would be here. Right. And that's kind of the one where we'd kind of agree on. And I decided, like, you know, to trust him, because I'm not going to, at the end of the day, what else can I do? I'm not going to force it. This movie's either going to live or die on his taste.
It's,
you know,
it's definitely auteur driven. And you were smart as a performer to be like, look, I got to trust. I mean, he's fucking lumped it to 7 years to get it here. Yeah. I got to believe he's got a vision, because I think about it, it plays very specifically, like, if when you describe the way Evan directs, it reminds me of young me in my 20s, when I too was like, breathe here, go up on this word, because you missed that, like, you got to say it like this. That was how I learned the term line reading on Mallrats. I was telling Shannon Doherty, like, you got to do this, say it like this, and she goes, did you just give me a line reading? And I was like, is that what it's called? I never had the name for it, but yeah, I want you to say it the way I said it.
This whole fucking thing was line readings. And the one compromise we kind of got to a week in, I just said, hey man, I'll do whatever you want, but you got to give me two takes. You come up to me after the first take, you can give me one note. Just one, whatever you want. It can be broad or it can be specific. Don't overload me to where I'm not free anymore. Right. My freedom is over. I'm shackled to like filling out this thing you've signed me, and then let's start. And we sort of did that, and it's great. And I do wonder, you know, like, and I also, we had a little I felt like my feeling was, we're making a comedy that has hidden depth and hidden drama, but if it doesn't live as a comedy, we're dead. And it's got to be funny, and then everything else is gravy. If it's funny, it's a great movie already, and then all this stuff will surprise you. But if it's not funny, none of the rest of the stuff's going to matter. And I knew it'd be funny either way. Evan's a very funny person and is a very funny writer. But that was kind of where my head was. And, you know, I felt, no, I was like more like, are we filming Gone Girl? Or are we I felt like he was Fincher-ing me. And even in the cut, you know, the initial cut, the long cut, it's like it was way drier and slower. And he has cut the comedy now, the comedy that I sort of always thought we're making. Not that every movie doesn't get tighter and tighter in post, but, you know, it started, the initial cut was much more of a drama or going for tension that ultimately would dissipate because it needs to be tighter and funnier. And I credit him with, you know, first of all, making a fucking wonderful movie. So thank you. I'm glad I trusted him. I didn't have any choice, but I did. And here we are. And I would do it again in a heartbeat. I want to. And also, you know, getting a performance out of me that I wouldn't have done on my own. You know, I do wonder, like, had I had a little more free range, what would be in there? Would there, you know, but not that I was looking to ad lib. I wasn't in this, but, you know, had I gotten a little looser, but at the same time, I think there's a melancholy and just a quietness of delivery and a consistency of tone that's all his. And I certainly wouldn't have done by myself, and I couldn't be more proud of the movie. So
I doubt you would have earned the final moment of the movie if you were allowed to do your thing. And I could see where you easily could have done your thing. Because, you know, there's ways to be a quote unquote loser, and then there's ways to be an outraged loser that are funny and stuff like that. But I think your director served you. I think, like, at the end of the day, because having seen the movie, it's that the final moments of the movie are earned by that melancholy that you're talking about. And if you were more easily excitable as a character than you are currently in the movie, it's at the pitch perfect level to make that ending land and work. And the ending is earned, and it's powerful. Like, you know, suddenly you're like, holy shit, I didn't realize this was the movie that we were heading into. So I think he was right to direct you there, man.
That was what I was worried about specifically, was just knowing where we were heading in the end. But I will say that, like Adam said, you know, we would give him like the first few takes before I intervened with my kind of like very specific, notes. And we used a lot of those takes. Like I learned a huge lesson in directing like him in this movie as well. And just in terms of, I hear the script a very particular way. And as well, it's because like, for me, the way I'm accessing it is it's kind of like I am Abe. I kind of am the character when I'm, you know, reading the script, writing the script. And so I hear it at a particular decibel, I guess. And I know I can trust that because that's just how I understand the movie. And I think like to Adam's point, you know, one thing that he's told me, and in fact, I think it was like our second last week of shooting, was just like, this is the lowest you've ever been toned down in like your entire career. You've been doing it for 20 years. And I was like, oh my God, like what have I done on like my first, you know, proper feature. And, I think that, I was always worried about how are we going to earn the ending, you know, knowing how dark this movie gets and how emotional it ultimately becomes. Like, I just wanted to be careful that we were not in any way sacrificing the reality of the character, that in no way were these characters becoming kind of like caricatures,
right,
or feeling too large, you know. And it's an elevated universe, so we had like a fair bit of rope there in terms of like, you know, the pitch of everybody's performance. But that was the thing I was the most concerned about. And so as a result, I think I probably did, like, if we were to do it again, yeah, I would have wanted to like a little bit more of the rainbow in there too, you know. And I think that's an important lesson that I've learned, is just like, you know, getting it at sort of those different levels, and it just gives you so much more to work with in the edit. And to Adam's point, like, I was in the edit you know, realizing that, oh, the movie, it's not dynamic enough. It needs more energy. It just needs a little bit more liveliness. And so I was going back to all those first takes of his and like using them, just taking them and like throwing them in wholesale and like just turning the energy up. And that really was, I think, kind of like the big moment where it's like, finally, this was this started to feel like a movie that worked as both a comedy and a drama. And not really like, you know, forfeiting any amount of one for the other. And so he was right. I guess we were both kind of right. But like,
what it sounds like is a recipe for like, now you know exactly how to write for him and how much free rein to give him on the day, you know, and the next thing you do, the character is going to be completely different. The poignancy level probably won't be the same. Like, you know, the character arc is completely different. But now you know what he's capable of. Like, now that you've been with him and now that you've been post, you're like, oh, shit. Like, fucking, I did want those muscles and whatnot. You'll find yourself writing to it and then looking forward, like, not cringing at, like, can you not do more? You'll find yourself looking forward to the more. Once you get what you want, then you just turn it over to them and be like, go, what would you do? And then, like, they give you gold. Like, not all of it. Some of it is dog shit. But some of it is absolutely brilliant, and you can cherry pick it. Like, early in my career, I was the same way, where I'm like, just do the script, please. Like, please do not deviate. No Mad Libs, please. Just do the fucking script. And then slowly over time, like, after working with Chris Rock and then Will Ferrell and so forth and so on, like, Adams, Seth Rogen, Justin Long is another one who's fantastic at ad-libbing and stuff. Suddenly you realize this ain't a bad thing, man. Like, especially because they're ad-libbing within the script and like, as the storyteller, I enjoy it when a performer could like ad-lib new material within the storyline, because it's almost like you're the original fan of the material because you've written it and you know it insanely well backwards and forwards. And when an actor is really great at just ad-libbing and shit and adding stuff, but within the character, it's like you get to view a mini sequel to your script done by somebody else. And like, they're telling inside jokes that only you would understand because it's like a script nobody else is. It becomes oddly gratifying, you know, where you're just like, oh, I like that. That's a good fucking move. So you'll find, I'm sure, not saying this condescendingly, but you've already seemed to have found the idea of like, yeah, man, maybe I'll let a little more of his color onto the page and stuff.
Oh, for sure. And the last thing I wanted to do was put Adam as well in any kind of a box, or like, I didn't want him to act out the film the way that I would do it. You know, like, I'm the biggest fan of Adam and have been for such a long time. I was obsessed with like the first season of the OC. I thought he was so amazing in that. I thought he was so funny. And in fact, a funny story is, yeah, I think it was the second time that we met. I was actually when I was in Park City with the Dirties, and he was at Sundance with another movie, and I was like, oh, we got to show you this link to the Dirties, and sent it to him over email like instantly. And then me and Johnson and the rest of the team were just sort of like talking afterwards, and it suddenly occurred to us that like we have these two huge OC posters as like prominent set
That's
deck
right.
and like the key yes. location of that movie. So Adam's face is probably in like a solid 20 minutes of the film
that
he's about to watch
that.
Without
That's
any
true.
Warning.
Yes.
and so we quickly sent an email. It was like, oh, by the way, like these characters are like really big fans of the OC, and kind of like brushed it off.
That's
but no, I remember I discovered that show like a few years after the fact. And, I just thought it was so funny, like laugh out loud funny because of what Adam was doing on it. And which is why, like, you know, when we first met, I was like, I got to pitch you some ideas just because I knew that like with this particular project, like that there was a lot of, I was excited about the fact that it was going to be something different for him, that it was going to be like just more intense, I guess, and more dramatic than anything really that we've seen him do previously. But it was also benefiting from like his charisma and his instinct, you know, his comic instinct, like just the fact that he's so watchable in every instant, and you just, you know, you want to be in his company, even if he is this kind of like sort of washed up and washed out and kind of sort of selfish, you know, character who's like constantly lying to everybody. I don't think there are a lot of actors that could have gotten away with it the way that Adam is able to get away with it. And so that was the crutch upon which this whole thing relied, was just like, you know, Adam's going to play this character. This can work.
You pulled off Gumshoe wonderfully, sir, but you pull off everything pretty damn good, including off camera, apparently Parenthood. When I saw you on Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, you were eloquent about being a dad. How is that?
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. We just had a son recently, but I have a 5-year-old daughter, and her and my relationship with her is literally the thing I'm the most proud of in my life. Like, I couldn't think she's cooler.
You were talking about how, like, it was profound shit about, like, being like, everything I cared about, I don't care about anymore. And I used to give a shit about this and this. And like now, like it was, you completely transformed. And not like you used to be fucking Scrooge and then you met three ghosts in the night. But you, like, it was like seeing somebody understand what's important, like, in life. And you know, in this business, like, it's very driven where you're like, I got my foot in the door. I want to keep my foot in the door. How do I stay in the room? Am I going for the right parts and stuff like that? And the guy I met on Reboot, and he was only there for a day, but was so at peace and so zen, and it had everything to do with being a dad. Like, you said the most beautiful and eloquent things about your kid, man. It was really like, you know, you're like, look, you were like, this is the thing that really blew me away. You were like, I'd much rather hang out with her than like anyone else because I find her fascinating. You're like, she's smart. She's got good taste in movies. You're like, I literally enjoy talking to her. So I don't find myself interacting with most of the world. I interact with the kid. Now you say you got another one? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, I had a son. We have a son. He's 3 months old.
Congrats. Holy crap, man. So yeah, now you, and now, and the way you described Parenthood on Reboot, which was like a year ago or whatever, you sounded like one of those parents. It's like, how could anyone have two? I have, like, there's not enough love for the one. What is it like now having to add two into the mix?
I mean, we're in strange times. So it's like we've been quarantined, and it's actually, in that regard, it's actually been very, it's like a nice, it's a fortuitous, we're incredible. If you have to be stuck at home, doing it in the third and fourth trimester, is a great time to do it. So we're very lucky in that way. And, you know, I while we have two, I still don't feel like the he's such a baby. I don't feel like, well, I have two. I've got these two yet. So it hasn't gotten super chaotic yet, but we just wanted to make sure that, our daughter, we all have spent extra time with our kids probably during all this. And, right. You know, I've made sure we've, you know, gone out of our way to make her feel, and you know, she feels like a priority. She's, you know, not getting shortchanged, but just that she really, I've had such good daddy daughter time. And I don't know, man, you know, I mean my wife is like, I'm very, very, very lucky. I have like healthy, wonderful children and such a partner that I look up to, truly. And it's just, I look up to in so many ways, and it's such a fun person to hang out with as well, that, you know, and not everyone has that, you know, a lot of people have kids and not everyone gets that. And I used to think, like, before I was with my wife, I was like, man, let's just say someone got pregnant, you know, like, right. I was like, if they're cool, I'm cool. And they're cool. And we could share a kid, you know, I'd split a kid with whoever, like, right. Wouldn't be a big deal. And like, no, maybe, but I understand now the level of teamwork involved and how much it could potentially hurt to give up, you know, to have to give up the responsibility or not just all the complication that would ensue. And to not be able to kind of dictate the environment for your kid half the time would be, could be very, very challenging depending on who it is. And even in the best of circumstances, I'm sure it's challenging. So, you know, just lucky. And as for, you know, me, my priorities, you know, if, if you're doing it right, they should be your priority. You know, not to, you know, I mean, I know people have gone on and made great art, and, you know, not all great artists who gifted the world, and scientists and leaders and thinkers have gifted the world, you know, weren't the greatest parents,
yeah,
not necessarily. But I mean, I think if you're being a parent right, then they have to be your priority. They are, of course. And so that's, I'm happy to say it was pretty natural. And at the same time, you know, it's not that I don't care about, I care about my job. I care about acceptance. I care about being popular. I care about looking cool, all that stuff. And in some ways, you know, maybe I protest too much, and it's also my security blanket where I can say, like, I don't have to care about you because I've got, you know, my family, when in reality, I still care. But, you know, I'm trying to have both.
That's the key to it all, man, right there. So far, it seems to be working out. Your latest effort is fantastic. And I don't just say that as a friend. I say it as a fan. Like, it's a wonderful piece. I'm going to watch it again.
Awesome.
It was a wonderful piece of work, Evan. And I don't want to rush you on the next thing, but do a lot. Like,
thank you.
Get up to Coen Brothers level output, because you've got that kind of brilliance going on. This movie is really wonderful.
That means it, like, so much. And I also just want to say, like, I got insanely lucky with the team that surrounded me on this. All of my keys department heads were just, like, gave so much of themselves. Again, we were working on a budget that was still really challenging proportionate to the script that we shot. And I honestly, like, Adam and I used to think this movie was kind of cursed in terms of how long it took and how close we would come, and then it would, you know, fall away. It became evident to me super fast while we were shooting that, like, we got so lucky. Like, the fact that it took 7 years, who cares? The people that came together to do it, our producers, DP, production designer, costume designer, composer, the whole cast, like, wow. I was like living in a dream. And so I don't want to soak up too much, you know, of the credit, because I know that, like, this was such a team effort. And of course, like, Adam just delivering, you know, this kind of, like, unreal performance. Just phenomenal. I got too lucky on this. So hopefully I'll be as lucky on the next one.
You guys should keep working together, man. You got a good thing going. And you're both young,
for sure.
So you can get a lot of work out of each other and whatnot. The movie is called The Kid Detective, and you could see it in a theater near you. That's still going on, man. Check your local listings. It comes out on a bunch of screens here in the States, and they're also opening it in England at the same time, or like a week later.
So. Well, I thought so, but now I'm not sure, because I'm seeing less out of the UK, so we're waiting for an update there. But we were originally told, it'd be
that
UK.
Sounded so dark and crimson. I'm hearing less out of the UK, and I'm like, we were only on a podcast for an hour and a half. What has happened?
I also, before I forget, I have to say our editor Kurt, who's one of my best friends, who also cuts Nirvana the Band the Show and did Operation Avalanche. He gave a year of his life to make this movie with me. We spent so long editing it, and he is just an unbelievable talent, an unbelievable friend. Have to squeeze everybody in. Sorry.
No, I could totally appreciate that. You got a hell of a cutter. You got a hell of a shooter, man. You got a hell of a cast. All those kids are wonderful, man. The parents were great. Like, everybody across the board, great. And Adam, of course, absolutely great. The movie is worth your time, ladies and gentlemen. I enjoy the shit out of it. If you enjoy shit that I enjoy, you're going to enjoy the fuck out of The Kid Detective, man. Put that on a poster if they still make those. There it is, man. That's Smodcast for this week. I'm Kevin Smith.
I'm Evan Morgan.
I'm Adam Brody.
Have a week.
This podcast has been produced exclusively for members of That Kevin Smith Club. .com